is Alex once again with the EOT News Flash. It feels like we haven't done this in a while, but it's only been a week. But this is episode 51. We are closing in on the year anniversary, so that's pretty cool. This is episode 51, throwing gasoline on the fire. And we will get to why that is shortly. So as always, I'm joined by some good buddies of mine. We got Sean here tonight. How's it going, Mr. Busted Sleeves?
Pretty good.
He's actually wearing sleeves tonight.
It was clean shirt, so I grabbed it.
That's fair.
I did my part for you guys.
The sun's not out, so the guns can't come out either. That's fair. That's fair.
Exactly.
All right. You played at the RPTQ or the LCQ, right?
I played at the Last Chance.
How did things go for you on that weekend?
Man, I picked up Bant.
Bant Company?
Company. And I felt like it was a pretty tuned list. I lost to Josh Crow, not hitting a fourth land. Then I lost to Emerge, who game one beat me with double Kozlex, turn game two beat me with double Fiend, both before the end of turn six. And then finally I was like playing it out for some points, and I played against Ramp Planner, the most like salty beating I've ever gotten. I get him to one. I have three advocates, he has three advocates, but I have three other creatures on the board.
Mm-hmm.
He has a flip Chandra, and so on his turn he pluses Chandra, not Chandra, he has a flip Nissa. He pluses Nissa, revealing Nissa, takes the Nissa, plays the new Nissa, gets the land, flips the new Nissa, six mana open, pluses Nissa, flips Chandra, plays Chandra, minuses Chandra for three to wipe my board, minus both of ours, but the six advocates in play. And then I proceed to draw three lands while he goes draw Pia and Kieran, the temple that becomes the 9/7.
Yeah.
Make 2/3 ones, sack P and Kieran, my two Thopters, and these 2/3 ones, make Ormondal and hit you. And
oh, like, my God.
You're at one. I'm like, okay.
Talk about, like, yeah. Just the hits keep on coming.
Yeah, it was backbreaking. I should have held the. I played two creatures to make me have six into his three, and I should have just played one creature to make me have five into his three.
Okay.
And then I might have still been able to find something, but I still think I'm probably losing that game regardless.
That's fair. Tough breaks, tough breaks.
Yeah, so I was like, after that happened, I'm like, all right, well, this is what Bonfire felt like. We're back, back in Bonfire.
At least
days.
He didn't do the whole, you know, just put his hands out and go, what do you got, bro?
Yeah. Oh, it was rough. But, I mean, it was all right. It was a rough showing for most of the squad at that turn, at the tournament the next day, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think the format was just, there's just so many different decks.
Yeah.
And, the matchups are really, like, hit and miss on what's good and bad, and it's just a weird format right now. I like a lot of the decks, but the problem is it's not like this deck beats that deck. It's like this hand beats that hand.
Sure.
So it becomes really weird.
I gotcha. Well, still good showing. We also got Justin here tonight. How's it going, Justin?
Going all right.
Not playing any big tournaments this weekend?
No.
Oh, yeah, you bailed on us. I had to drive instead. That's
okay. Yeah, well, unfortunately, at 10 o'clock the night before, my parents were vacationing in Mexico, and I was under the impression that
you got
they
the call
were,
from the cartel, Señor Dustin. We have your parents. We need 10 zillion pesos.
At least that would have been interesting. No. I was informed that they were coming in Saturday, not Sunday, like I was originally told. And
to escape the cartel makes sense.
Of course.
Parents are smart.
And so instead of playing Magic, I got to sit around my house all day and wait for their plane to land.
Huh.
Yeah. So that was my day.
Decent choice of a weekend, I imagine. But so I actually went and played at the Super IQ that Justin would have put in playing at. So I went with our good buddy Will Barlow, and we drove up there together. Took Jessica and Harry up there. Was in first place going all through the Swiss. Took a loss in round five playing for placement in top eight, and lost to Merfolk in the quarterfinals of the top eight. But super sweet tournament. Like, the deck was feeling really good. I got to test out some new tech against Affinity, or some new tech on the sideboard, and you know, in general, that came in against Affinity that actually saved my butt at one point. I'm gonna try and get up a video sometime this week or weekend of the full deck tech and kind of like the breakdown of the tournament, so I don't bore you guys with the full tournament report right now. So be on the lookout for that. It's gonna be sweet. You're gonna see my face and Magic cards, and what could be better than that?
I mean, like, the cards part's sweet, but I could go without the face.
Well, you don't have to watch. You can just listen.
But then I can't see the cards.
Yeah.
See?
I'm torn. No, I'm on him.
Screw both of you guys.
I want to see the cards. I don't want to see you. We're torn. So I'll probably sleep.
And that is probably a decent third option, I think. So anyway, my two salty co-hosts. Hey. So also over the weekend, we also had the Invitational take place. Surprisingly, elves won the entire thing. I guess no one was pecking their supreme verdicts in anger of the gods that day. Not sure what happened there.
We still haven't figured out the Eldritch Evolution package. It's just old elves.
Yep, just old elves. So it's nothing new. It's like literally the 75 is...
It's classic looking.
Yeah, it's a Mr. Liam Lordigan. I believe that's how you say his name. If I can get this list to load. Yep, pretty stock. I do like that he's got Chameleon Colossus in the sideboard against the black decks.
Yeah,
just Chameleon pump Colossus it up and just pop it up jam in. That's pretty.
I mean, it's
hot.
Like Jund and Abzan list. Just like he'll never kill me. And yes. He makes a lot of mana, and yep. He just makes this thing fat and. They don't really have a lot of creatures they can afford to block with very much.
Definitely not. So it's a cool list. You know, he's rocking the cords and the collected companies. I probably just want to say that there's no need for evolution because there's nothing to really jump up to higher than three in the deck. And I doubt if there's any fours that you want to play.
No, yeah, to go any bigger. The evolution is if you're trying to break it. But there's sure, not sure. There's nothing in this one about it.
Yeah. So the top eight was actually pretty diverse. So we had Jund in second place, Death Shadow Aggro in third. Obzon took third, or fourth. Wait, that should be fourth. Wow. Affinity was in fifth place, Jeskai Control in sixth, Dredge in seventh, and Burn in eighth. So to say that the format is healthy is an understatement right now, I think. We've had some ups and downs. We've seen Dredge break out. We've seen Elves come out of nowhere and win things. Like, it's a very... it feels fresh, and it feels open. You can just walk into a tournament, and if you know you're 75, you're going to be good to do, I would say, at least... pretty well, if not better than that.
Yeah. This Dredge, I think Tom Ross, I'm checking right now, I think he top aided the weekend before with Dredge also.
Yes, he did. And I think they were playing the same 75 as Ross Merriam was, and he actually won the whole thing. At least the open part of the weekend, that is.
Yeah.
So, speaking of Modern and things breaking out and shaking things up, a little bit of information was leaked out. Late last week, if I'm not mistaken, and it was an article that was written by TCG Players, resident sort of finance guy. They usually do like a top 10 weekly highest sellers. And everything was normal up until number one. And the number one hottest selling card from last week on TCG Player was Bloodbraid Elf, which is currently banned in Modern and only sees Fringe play in Legacy. And the question was, well, why? And they posted a link to a Reddit page, and you guys know how much I love Reddit, that was basically showing that Bloodbraid Elf is legal currently, or was legal, might not be right now, on the Magic Online beta client. And once that got out, the sky literally fell, because that's how Magic players react. So what do you guys think about Bloodbraid Elf being legal on the Modo beta client? So I know you got a pretty out there tinfoil conspiracy hat, which is quite appropriate for tonight.
Right. So, all right. So my main stance on it is they're just testing.
Yes, they're just testing.
They've never come out and kind of said what they test on bans with, but my theory is that they test any card that hasn't been banned in the last, like, year, 2 years, and they test any card that's not on a list of never unbans. Like, they won't ever test the Skull Clamp or the Artifact Lance because those are too good, they'll never get unbanned.
Yep.
But everything else they're going to test in the current metagame, so they're unlocking the cards one card at a time, testing them in the current metagame, and seeing how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
I think the testing online comes because, as we've seen, Standard's pretty consistent after the first couple weeks, whereas the Modern metagame, Dredge pops up out of nowhere, Elves comes up and wins a tournament when it hasn't top 8ed recently, so the format's a lot more fluid. So in order to test effectively, they need to be able to get access to it a little bit easier.
Sure.
So I think this is just them testing their list of cards that aren't on their don't worry about testings.
Yes.
The conspiracy theory I had, just because I was like, I know Alex wants it back, and so I'm like,
German copies. I want them to be played.
I was like, I'm going
to
come in here and shoot him down that this card's not coming back because it does way too many good things.
I know it's not coming back.
But how cool would it be if they are testing slowly, piece by piece, some of the banned cards in certain current decks to create a vintage cube where it's like the pre-con decks, so it's their unbanned cube. And they don't want to unban everything because then like certain decks get way more. Like Affinity gets way more with all these artifact lands. Jund gets a lot with Deathrite Shaman and Bloodbraid Elf. So they're only going to unban parts of it and make a cube where you get to experience some of these unbanned cards.
Like, wait, when you say cube, you mean like a gauntlet?
Like a gauntlet. Oh, okay. Yeah, like a gauntlet. Some so like we'll get a Delver list with Treasure Cruise back, but they won't give it Skull Clamp. we'll get the Jund list with Blood Raid Elf, but they won't give it Deathrite Shaman. So they give them some of the pieces that are banned just to be like, look how crazy things can get, but not all of them.
Okay. Kind of like that modern no ban gauntlet we were working on that we're going to do eventually. Okay. I swear we're going to do eventually.
As soon as the ban list stops changing every announcement.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but like, what if it's just them testing one card at a time to figure out which cards can fit in these metagames, and that way they can do something like that, just because they always are looking for, like, every couple months, something for fun to do.
Yeah.
Right? And so that would be a pretty cool, fun thing for them to try out.
Okay, I can buy that. But
I think it's still more, we're so far away from the unbanning, I don't think they're going to ban this thing. I think it's more just like, let's test our cards, they get the information in advance, and they accidentally posted it.
Yeah. What about you, Justin? What do you think about the Modo leak?
I think that it was a bug.
You know, a bug, you'll say.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Blood Raid Elf is too good. There's no way it gets unbanned. Mm-hmm. Especially with... I mean, I'd be more likely to believe that it was getting unbanned if Jund was in a bad spot right now.
Which it's certainly not.
But Jund is one of the most popular decks. It's doing very well competitively. I think it's what, like, it's 10-12% of the meta?
I think I said it's on 9 somewhere, but yeah, it's high.
Yeah.
It's up there with Affinity and Zoo right now.
So, and then, like, the argument that you mentioned is, like, but if they unban Bloodroot Elf, they can unban a Jeskai, or not Jeskai.
Jace the Mind Sculptor.
There we go. Words. Jace the Mind Sculptor. And the problem with that is that's entirely too powerful in Jeskai Nahiri right now. That just gives them... another piece.
I don't know if it's too powerful.
I don't think it is, to be completely honest.
Because you can't run both of them, so it makes it a brand new deck.
Yeah,
you can't run like eight.
It gives a little bit. It gives a little bit more power to these blue white control decks we've been seeing pop up more recently. You could probably play one, but other than that, it's too hard to run multiple 4-drop planeswalkers in a deck.
Yeah. And here is your win con, but I don't know if it would get unbanned. It is really strong, but I don't think it's insane in this format that's so fast.
Yeah, that's the other consideration. Yeah. Like that's my whole thinking right now is that I truly believe that had they banned Deathrite Shaman first, then it would have been a little bit long before Blood Braid got banned or even was banned. Because I think they did it backwards personally. Because once we saw that Blood Braid was out, we're still turn toing Liliana off of Deathrite Shaman acceleration, and that's still a thing.
Yeah. No, I mean there's just some broken stuff you can do with Blood Braid as far as like the cascade mechanic itself is just really dangerous.
Yes.
And so the cascade card options we have as now aren't as good.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that would make Living In just even better, right?
I don't know if it would make it better because as soon as the Living In goes off, the Blood Raid Elf goes away.
But I mean, it's just an extra cascade.
It's a 12th piece, essentially.
And the only things they can cascade into, like, so they would have to tune their deck a little bit differently. They can hit Simeon Spirit Guide and they can hit Beast Within. But outside that, all the creatures are too expensive.
That's a good point,
So most of the time, Blood Raid Elf would cascade into another cascade spell, which would cascade into Living In.
Yeah. It'd make it a less consistent deck, especially against the blue decks that have that are relatively good against it until they bring in Ricochet Trap, which they couldn't run anymore. Mm-hmm. Or, well, they could actually because it would just skip over it because Blood Raid is 4 and so is Ricochet's 4 as well. So it'd be a different deck probably altogether. So we'll have to see. My one thought is that, if they are testing this for a future unban, I'm wondering if there might be something in Kaladesh that just gives a shot in the arm to multiple decks, and they just realize that we need to give a piece of power back to a deck to keep things in check more. But that's all just hypothetical.
I mean,
nonsense going on.
That could be the case. I don't think it's going to be. I believe that if they ban or unban anything, it's not going to be in response to cards that are coming to Modern.
They've said that it's not what it is.
That's very true, It's all just
They've said before they don't make any changes or anything like that to Modern with cards coming out because they don't have a Modern Feature League. So they have no idea how cards are going to impact Modern.
So it just doesn't seem like a reasonable theory.
Yeah. I mean, I've been pondering, why on earth they would even do this, because...
They'll have a Modern department. This job is just cyclically test these cards for
Wizards,
months to get...
Wizards, hire me for that. I will jam unbanned Splinter Twin games all day long.
Their R&D department is just... They're all right, what's the next card on the list? Blood Braid Elf? All right, what cards in the current metagame is going? Let's test it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they're constantly cycling through just getting data points. Like, it's easier now. Like, the only way where you're, like, you're... So, like, how your justification would work is that the format's kind of starting to make sense now. We know mm-hmm. what pops up to make Jund disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Like if a format is a format where Chon is good, Jund is weak.
Mm-hmm.
But so if they are looking into the future and seeing that, like they don't actually have to test as much to kind of see that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure.
But I think it's more just that they're just regularly getting the data points.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Yeah, the last time we had anything like this happen was when the beta client leaked that Splinter Twin and Summer Bloom were getting banned.
Yeah.
And so that's the kind of the reason people are just like, the sky is falling, because if this is a trend that we're seeing, this could mean something's coming, but it's unlikely, I think.
Yeah, because that was like days before the change.
Yeah.
This is like months.
Yeah, months ahead. When that happened, that was on a Friday before the ban was actually went into effect on the Monday.
Yeah.
And they just moved up the whole thing to be the Saturday after. So, like, that was a huge message in general.
Yeah.
Like, that was a disaster for, I think, for PR for Wizards. But this is something that's just kind of, you know, I think on the horizon. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I think it's testing, and they have their own server for testing, and they accidentally, somebody coded it into the non-testing server.
Yeah.
And so it just, it kind of got out. But I think it's just gaining data points. Like, it could have easily been Jace, and I still don't know for a fact that that's what's getting unbanned. I mean, the format's fast enough. Like, Jace was weak before when format was fast and value-based, and if Jund's around, that pushes Jace down. But, like, any card you see, I don't think you put stock in it this far in advance.
Yeah, I don't. I've seen some people that are already buying copies up, but
the big thing is
it's a risk.
The big thing you have to ask yourself is: does Wizards care about Modo? Would they actually pay an employee this far in advance to properly prep and test a card to make sure it's not buggy? No.
Oh, man.
No, they don't care about that.
This is a symptom of Modo just deteriorating to the point where it can't even be stable anymore.
Yeah.
We're just gonna see this every day, like. Jace the Mind Sculptor is now legal in Standard for some reason. Yeah. Just crap like this. The Matrix is imploding on itself.
Well, like, if this was like right before, I'd be like, oh, this could be a thing. But, I mean, they're definitely not paying a guy 2 months in advance to put the card into the list.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
They want to pay anybody to do that. They barely pay anybody to, like, make sure the servers are turned on every morning. Like, preemptively adjust the setup.
I can see somebody going in with, like, a torch down to this, like, dank dungeon and just kind of pulling on this string that fires up this oh, what do you call those machines that are really complicated?
Rube Goldberg
machines, and it, like, you know, the chicken, like starts making a lot of noise, and it sets up a speaker or whatever, and, like, Modo, like, kind of, like, grinds away, and there's steam and smoke, and it's this arcade.
Yours is a lot more pretty and like, positive than mine. The way I picture it is, like Rosewater comes out and greets a new intern and goes, "We've got a position for you." And he brings him in, brings him down a staircase, opens a door to where there's one candle, and there's like a body in the corner of the previous intern whose job it was just to spin the wheel. And like they forgot to move the body, and Rosewater's like, "Oh, sometimes we leave them. Here's your Wilson," and just like pushes the intern in the room and closes the door. Like, he's this is the effort level they have. They
one
just
of those treadmill.
Yeah, he's in there just hamstering it. That's how we keep going. That's why it's always so laggy. It's why it takes 5 minutes to find a match when 1,000 players are in a league. Get out of here.
Yeah, I assumed it always was similar to the Princess Bride, the torture device that the six-fingered man had.
Same concept.
Yeah, here. Where it just like slowly drains the life out of interns to power.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's like they just bike them until they die, and they're like, "All right, get the body out, get the new one." And the guy forgot to get the body out.
Yeah.
The one guy was like, "Well, I'm taking my mandated 15 and left the body in there. And Rosewater brings the new intern down and goes like, "Dang it, we did it again.
Whoops.
We'll come pick it up at some point, I promise."
All right. Let's not harp on Wizards anymore, because they've got something pretty cool that is releasing this Friday, actually. Which, of course, is Conspiracy 2, Take the Crown. We're not going to do a full set review, but so this is going to be our kind of Conspiracy review in general for you guys. So if you didn't draft it last time, the original set came back out in 2014, if I'm not mistaken. And essentially what it is, this is an alternate draft format where you have a pot of eight players, and you draft normally until you pick cards that actually change the mechanics of the draft. Some of them you draft face up, or you do what the card says, and it makes things interesting. Well, the last go-round, it had a card that allowed you to add a booster pack from outside the draft into the draft and create a four-pack draft, which was really cool. You could take an entire pack if you wanted to. You could do all kinds of goofy, screwy things. And this
they brought some of that back, and this was...
Yeah, so that came back. And the problem that I had with the first go-around was that it felt very... it was easy to get ganged up on and just get knocked out very quickly. I think they have fixed that here. Everything feels a little bit more balanced.
Not fully fixed, but they've incentivized not to go with your friends and let's attack the other guy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one of the big things that they've done is that there's a lot more cards that say each opponent instead of target opponent.
Yeah. They fixed the mechanics for sure. And that's what we're going to touch on here first. So the mechanics, we're just going to do a list of mechanics here pretty much. And the first mechanic that we have is called Monarch. And what this does is, I'm going to find the actual...
I think this is their big fix to the format.
Yeah. So what Monarch does, and I'm trying to find the token that goes with it, which apparently has been lost from the website. So basically, a lot of the cards in the set say, when this comes into play, or you play this card, you become the Monarch. And as long as you're the Monarch, at the end of your turn, you draw an extra card. And if you get damaged during any other turn, you lose the crown, and the crown goes to control...
Well, it says they become the Monarch.
They become the Monarch. Basically, the crown just moves.
Yeah.
Did you guys happen to notice what was wrong with the Monarch token when it first got released?
Yeah, the text was wrong.
The text was wrong.
What did it say?
So it said... it should have said, on the end of your turn, or beginning of your instep. It was at the beginning of... instep, or it was missing a really crucial word that made it sound very, very funny.
Oh,
okay. It sounded like somebody, some intern was about to be done on that bike and left off a word.
I think it was at the beginning your instep.
Yeah, it's right here. At the beginning your instep, draw a card. Whenever a creature deals combat damage to you, its controller becomes the Monarch. Like the first sentence sounds like those like crappy, I'm tired of seeing them computer cards that get made.
Yeah.
At the beginning your instep, not of. They left out of.
So yeah, it's just one of those goofy things, and I really hope that is what gets printed.
I think
printed.
It's too late to redo it.
I think you're right.
I think this is what our Monarch token is just a highlight of how much effort sometimes Wizard gives.
Yeah, until they go with the next set or the next print run and they fix it. So pick up your incorrect Monarch tokens now because they'll be worth something someday. That is some sound financial advice from the EOT Newsflash.
If they bring back Monarch in the next set, these will be worth more because people love to play with wrong things.
Yes. Now, the one thing that we haven't found out just yet, all of the other mechanics in the set work within internal format context. We don't know if Monarch can actually be used outside of Conspiracy Drafts because there's implications in Pauper, Vintage, and Legacy for this. We can't actually do something. So it's pretty cool.
I would expect that the cards that say you become Monarch to make you a Monarch in these older formats. I mean, like...
Right.
I mean, I understand that conspiracies, obviously don't exist in Legacy and whatnot, but, this is on a creature card. This is on an enchantment on...
Right.
So I think Monarch doesn't exist until you play one of those cards in Legacy or Vintage or Pauper.
Well, and most of the cards that make you Monarch are just priced in a way that's not really very good.
Yeah, so it's more Pauper that the implication is there for. Like, there's a couple of good Death Touch ones that let you become the Monarch.
Yeah.
So we will see. I'm
the
very curious.
The ability is insane if it is doable. That's the only reason I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Is because, like, especially in Legacy and Vintage, there are some decks that never deal combat damage to you unless they're killing you.
Yep.
So for any of these control decks, like these Miracles decks, to be able to play this card that gives them to draw an extra card every instep, that's pretty insane. Like if they can become Monarch, there's a lot of decks that never touch them.
Yeah.
Reanimator doesn't hit you unless it's killing you a lot of times.
Yeah.
Show and Tell, things like that. So like the mirror match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it's like I become the Monarch. No, now I become the Monarch. Well, I'm gonna become the Monarch instead.
Yeah.
And then somebody has to do, like, if this is their invitational token. And if they word it correctly, and I'm stealing this from the Matt from Magic Mike's podcast, if they word it like they did on, like, the Jerry Thompson Merit Lage token, where it's Jerry Thompson is indestructible, or however when they worded it, they use the actual player's name instead of what it actually was, it will become, when this card comes into play, become the Monarch, and that token will read, you become Alex, because I'm the Monarch. Like,
so all I can think of...
You become Justin or Joshon.
I'm pretty sure, I do think this probably will be playable in other formats, just because, like Justin said, it is on cards that are played there, and it would be weird for them to alienate them.
Yeah.
That being said, I really want to win an Invitational now, because all I can think of are ways to make other countries hate me. Like... my North Korea Monarch token is going to be sick. It's going to be so sick.
I think you probably have to get that signed off by Star City Games.
Me as Kim Jong? Oh, it's going to be so sweet.
Oh, God. I'm glad we don't have a presence in North Korea.
Yeah. Nobody does. That's the part of the problem.
That's very true. Okay, before we get into
why we make these jokes.
Okay. We're still going to get shit. I'm hiding under the table now. This is not going to happen. Okay, so that's Monarch. The other mechanic, and I'm going to try and find one that actually has the mechanic on it. Melee. Here we go. So melee reads, whenever this creature attacks, it gets +1/+1 until the end of turn for each opponent you attack with a creature this combat. So this incentivizes not going after just one person.
Mm-hmm.
So when you spread out your attacks, creatures get bigger,
and this
which is very cool.
This is a primarily red-white ability.
Yes. Very much a combat-minded ability. Pretty generic. Nothing fancy about it, but it's a very solid mechanic for a format when you have three players to battle against. I think
it's
really cool.
It's two mechanics that reward. Like, so Monarch, even though you're sitting out with your buddy, you don't want to let them just sit there and be the Monarch forever.
Yeah.
You still want to beat your buddy. You might be like, I want to beat him less than I want to beat this other guy.
Yeah.
But whenever your friend's drawing extra cards every turn, you're not going to beat him. So you don't want to let him sit on Monarch forever.
Yeah.
And this is like, it at least incentivizes you to be like, well, I'm going to throw this token at you so you can block and eat it so I can get an extra pump to attack this other guy. But then now you've lost a creature just to pump a guy.
Definitely.
So it kind of incentivizes spreading around some of the aggression.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have another mechanic here that's brand new. This is called Goad. And so like during Homunculus here, which is Sean's spirit
man,
animal.
That card is my jam. I love that picture so much.
It's
and the flavor text.
It's as tall as him as well.
I don't know about that. It's a little bit shorter.
He's a little bit. I love that card, man.
So,
the flavor text is so sweet.
You have to get this thing tattooed on you somewhere. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Or at least his face.
I love how he's flicking somebody off.
So well. He is flicking somebody off.
He only has three fingers. Like, that's...
And the middle one's the one that's up. Oh, my gosh. Justin.
If this is your hand, how do you point it without being offensive? Like the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, they're jerks because they flip off everybody. Justin, you're
that's
a
how,
hero.
That's why the Ninja Turtles always point like this. They're just like, whoop.
So they
just
the,
point with their hands.
They give them the shocker instead.
Oh, God. His flavor text is so sweet. Nick with it always hated crowds, and they always hated him. He's my friend.
He probably hates you, though, Sean.
I so hope they make a little stuffed doll of this guy.
Oh, you know they will.
Oh, man, he's going to go at every turn. He's going to be sitting right next to me. And I'm going to hold up his little middle finger all the time. And I'll be like, it's on a wizard's card. You can't kick me out of the tournament.
Put it on your shoulder.
Yeah.
And sit there. Get Sean to sign your copies of Journey Homunculus. Foil copies, everything.
I've never been so excited for a card I'll never cast.
We'll get to the cool foil in this set. So anyway, Goad. It's usually on creatures. When it enters the battlefield, until your next turn, you goad target creature. And until your next turn... that creature attacks each combat if able, and attacks a player other than you if able. So that's a pretty sweet mechanic.
It's really sweet in like commander formats.
Yeah.
Because if you're playing in a pod of like five, and you play this guy, and you have an opponent who has like one fat creature, you're like, you're swinging at somebody else all the time, and eventually that person's gonna stop you.
Yeah.
And it's also worth noting, if that creature gets stolen... by another player, and it gets another combat step, and attacks again someone other than you.
Sweet.
If it has haste. If it gets stolen by somebody else that it doesn't have haste, it can't attack.
Okay.
Yeah, most of those
cards do give haste.
No, not the blue ones. Most of the ones that get played in Commander are blue ones, like mind control effects, and they don't give haste. The red ones do, and those don't get played as much because you're only instant.
Creatures like Memnarch, it's a permanent steal. That's not like a threat effect. So yeah, that's a good point there.
Yeah. Most of the Commander ones don't sit in play forever, but if like a lot of decks like to give their dudes haste, like they have anger in their graveyard, and so in those cases, that guy has to rumble.
Now, another thing that is worth mentioning with Goad, I read this in some Wizards article when they were spoiling mechanics. If you're the only legal target when a Goad creature attacks, they can attack you.
Yeah, and that's how it reads.
Yeah, because if able.
Yeah, if able. Like it's in the text itself. But yeah, that's a good way to clarify it. You know, that's something that can...
It's something
that will come
a lot
up,
of people are going to miss.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
And then there are ways around forcing the creature to attack as well.
Yeah, definitely. So the other new mechanic we have is Council's Dilemma. So this is kind of the opposite of Will of the Council, which was more of a voting mechanic that counted number of votes versus number of votes. So for instance, on Capital Punishment here, this is a 4 black sorcery that reads Council's Dilemma. Starting with you, each player votes for death or taxes. Each player sacrifices a creature for each death vote and discards a card for each taxes vote. So the Will of the Councils would be, you know, the number versus another number, and the winner of that vote got an effect of some kind. So this is a little bit more, I guess, fair in that sense that you can't gang up all on one person and just vote his board away or whatever. This is a little bit more balanced, I think, for a multiplayer game, which is why I think that this is going to be a much more fun and fair set to play and draft with. So pretty cool there. We've also got the conspiracies are back, obviously. So the conspiracies, you draft them like you would normally, but they don't actually go in your deck. And there's actually a couple of different kinds of conspiracies. So some of them, you start with the game with it face up, and it gives you an effect at some point. You've also got some that are called hidden agendas. So you start the game with it face down in the command zone, because that's where things go. And you secretly name a card. So obviously you have to write this out on a piece of paper and keep it hidden, because you can't be switching cards on the fly if you just draw what you need to at the wrong time. And you may turn this conspiracy face up at any time and reveal the card's chosen name. And then the creature or whatever gets an effect. So we have Incendiary Descent, which is a hidden agenda. And when you reveal it and the creature's name that goes along with it, creatures you control with the chosen name have pay a red. This creature gets +1/+0 till the end of turn. So they give it an effect. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool. We've also got the double agendas, which I'm trying to find now.
Which I don't think there is a double agenda.
They're at the bottom.
Oh, they're at the bottom?
Yeah, so... Wait. Okay, so yeah. Here's double agenda. So this is one... you start the game with this conspiracy face down in the command zone and secretly name two different cards. You may turn this up conspiracy face up at any time and reveal the chosen names. So on Summoner's Bond, when you do this, whenever you cast a spell with one of those names, you may search your library for a creature card with the other chosen name, reveal it, put it in your hand, shuffle your library. So they basically just have an extended effect when it takes two cards to actually make the conspiracy work. So it's a pretty cool effect. We don't have the actual draft manipulating ones anymore, where you can take an entire pack of cards, but there are still plenty of cards in the set that have you draft a little bit differently. One of my favorite ones so far is Arcane Savant, which is a 3 blue wizard. Before you shuffle your deck to start the game, you may reveal a card from your deck and exile it. Did I get that right? From your deck and exile an instant or sorcery card you drafted that isn't in your deck. So you reveal the Savant from your deck, and then reveal something you didn't draft from your leftovers. And whenever it enters the battlefield, you may exile. You may copy the card you exiled with it. So
the trick is, if you get lucky and you open two of this rare, though, you exile two different spells, and when you play one, you choose which one you cast.
Yes. So the cool bit is, if this thing makes it into the Vintage Cube somehow on Modo, you go to Cruelty with this bad boy.
There's some really cool things in here. There's some cards that let you control other people's votes, and I think there's one that lets you get an extra vote and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the thing that's gonna frustrate me a lot with it is they're mostly rares. There's a couple uncommons that actually reward you for drafting poorly.
Yes. Oh my god. Do they?
there are cards that that blue guy where you might be drafting blue black and pack three. There's some sick green spell, so you just take it, planning to exile it with this guy.
Berserk. You get Berserk.
The big card I'm thinking of is Animus of the Predation, and he's a 5-mana 4/4 green guy. Whenever you draft him face up. As you draft him, you may remove... as you draft a card, you may remove it from the game, from the draft face up. If it's a creature, he gains static abilities that are on the creatures you remove. So, you'll be drafting this green deck, and you'll be sending all these messages that you're on green to the person next to you, And so they're like, sweet, I'll move into red. And then all these Menace and Haste and First Strike red creatures come by that that guy's hoping to snag. And you just start stealing them to make your Animus is like just insane. And the, your person next to you is like, you got like signals get so thrown off by cards that let you like interact with like this exiled sideboard aspect.
And I love it. It's so cool. And the great thing is that if so visually, the cards that interact with the draft differently, so the ones that say draft face up, or have a, you know, reveal this card effect, they've got a really sweet border that I really like. That's a great way to differentiate them from the rest of the set. I think it's a really cool thing that they've done this with.
It makes it stand out when you're drafting.
Yeah. And so you know what to look for when you're looking for cards that do have effects like that.
Another thing that's worth noting about the Animus of Predation is that those cards that you exile, or I guess you remove from the draft face up, it says specifically that those cards aren't in your card pool. So if you...
Yes.
Yeah, so that's pretty interesting.
Right, that's what I'm talking about, though. Like, you're drafting cards that aren't in your color.
Yeah.
So you're hating out colors around you just to make this Animus stupid.
Yeah.
So, like, in your later picks, when you're like, oh, this card might not make the cut, you're just like, but I think my opponent really wants this blue creature. Well, now my Animus gets flying. Like, sweet.
Oh, it can't get flash, so you can't take the Deceiver Exarchs. That's unfortunate.
No, that's too bad, right?
Yeah, that's too bad. So... Those are the mechanics. So now what we're going to do, we're just going to go around the table a couple times and just point out, you know, cards that we're excited to play with, excited to draft with. I'm going to start right at the top and just knock this, just to take the elephant out of the room out of here. So they revealed earlier this week that the new Planeswalker, Kaya Ghost Assassin, she's got two different arts. And the only time you will see the other art is when you get her in a foil. And it's her, like, blade drawn coming out through the door that she's standing in front of in her regular art, ready to, like, you know, mess somebody's day up. And I can just imagine that these things are going to be worth about $1 bazillion.
Well, fortunately, all foils of her will have the alternate art.
Yes.
So it's not going to be as hard as it could be to acquire some of these other alternate arts that we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah.
It's not like the alternate Ugin or anything.
Yeah.
That was definitely one of the ones I was thinking about. It was just like alternate Ugin is worth $1 bajillion because it came in like these special packs that you had to get from doing this special thing, and you just had to get really lucky.
Yep.
So it will not be like that.
Yeah, but super, super cool. So one of the cards that I am really, really excited to play with, I'm going to find it here real quick. Oh, shoot, where to go? Here we go. So this is Archdemon of Paliano. This is a 2BB demon, 5/4, that you draft face up and has flying. Now, as long as it's up face up when you're during the draft, you can't look at booster packs. And you must draft cards at random. After you draft 3 cards this way, you turn it face down. So it makes you think about drafting in a completely different light. You know, do you take this guy early and sacrifice 3 picks, or do this guy come around towards the end, then take it, and just, you know, those throwaway packs at the picks at the end of the pack, you just don't care about them. But just for a card to make you evaluate how you're drafting so radically is super cool. And like a 5/4 for 4 mana, that's huge. I mean, this is Desecration Demon level stats here, and there's not a lot of removal in this set, so this guy's gonna go unchecked and probably just kill a couple people. So super sweet. So,
and there's some guys that'll kill him in combat.
Okay, yeah,
there's
a
some
couple
removal on creatures and stuff, but yeah, like he's still really good. Like,
yeah,
he's still a house.
Yeah, total beast. Justin, how about you? What's a card that you're excited to play with from this set, or just a card you're excited about in general in
this
set?
This Expropriate card, I think it is...
Where is that?
It is a blue mythic.
That one.
Yeah, it costs 7 blue.
The card's broken.
The card is broken.
It's playing Vintage and Legacy, probably.
And this card is like a great representation of like the ultimate power of blue.
What does it do?
Okay, so getting to that. So it's got Council's Dilemma, so it's got the voting
Jesus
mechanic. Starting with you, each player votes for time or money. For each time vote, take an extra turn after this one. For each money vote, choose a permanent owned by the voter and gain control over it.
Ugh.
Exile, expropriate.
You think Vintage, Sean?
The effect's super powerful.
It is like, super powerful. That's 9 mana, though.
Yeah, and Vintage, like, take an extra turn, steal your mocks. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like when someone has to be like, oh, I guess I give you two turns?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I already see this going into the Narset EDH decks.
Yeah.
You know, let's all vote. How many turns do I get to kill you, and how many things do I get to steal as well? This card is dumb.
At its CMC, it'll be hard, but like if people can play it in Vintage, I just said, like, are you going to give somebody two permanents? Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's not good. So it's real tough.
Yeah.
It's gonna be hard to play it. And there might be better payoff Stormish cards, but the effect is absolutely insane.
It's pretty sweet, and the flavor text is pretty great too. Few things are more valuable than time or money, and Leovold has plenty of both.
Good for Leovold, who's actually got his own card in this set. It's funny that the...
That's another card I'm excited
about. That Time Eaters has died, and then they print an actual Sultai commander for that.
Sultai's been like the one that hasn't had it forever.
Yeah, and he's actually pretty sweet. But yeah. Sean, what about you? What's a super sweet card you're
I've got
play
a couple
with?
That I can't really choose between. So
we'll go over this a couple times. We're not going to hold this at just one per... All
right. So I think one of my big ones is Sovereign Realm. It's a conspiracy.
Yes.
Your deck can't have any basic land cards.
Yep.
So that's and your starting hand size is 5. So you're like, well, that's really bad if I can't have lands. And you're losing 2 cards from your opening hand. But the payoff...
What?
Is you can exile a card from your hand this turn. You may play a basic land card from outside the game. Mm-hmm. Basic lands you have tap for 1 mana of any color. So, yes, you're going to 5 cards as your opener, but if you have no lands in your deck at all, those 5 cards are all gas.
Yeah.
And
your deck is all gas, too, because you've been taking every good card out of the pack.
Right, and your land is all reflecting bowls. So, like, the sad part is, like, you draft this pack 3, and you can't run it.
Yeah.
Because you haven't been building around it. But if this is your pack 1, pick 1, you're just, like, every best card that comes around me, and then it's another situation where the person to your left has no idea what you're doing, because you're like, pass them this white card, pass them this red card, pass them this green card, and the person next to you is just like, will you make up your mind? And you go, oh, I have
a
mind.
Up,
like, don't worry.
I made up everyone's
mind. Yeah, like, it's like playing Momervig, like, in a multiplayer deck. Like, this is so fun looking.
Yeah. So if you're familiar with a card game called Kaijudo, this is the mana system from Kaijudo that Wizards also developed.
It was the same as in Spoils. In the old card game Spoils, instead of having mana, you just take a card out of your hand and you locked it onto something on the table, and now it didn't become that card, it only depleted for mana.
Yeah.
So you never. It was the way they kind of got the Hearthstone jewel thing. Like, you never don't have mana, you just have to choose which card you care about the least and you turn that into mana.
Yeah.
But this thing just, and it makes everything reflecting pools that tap for everything, and
it's just cool.
I know I'm only going to draft this maybe once or twice because I'm not a huge fan of multiplayer formats personally. Like, it's just not a big thing I normally enjoy very much.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I'm going to draft it, and I'm going to open this card pack 3, and I'm going to cry like heavily that I didn't get it in pack 1. I'm like, can we all restart, please? Yeah, that card's nuts.
Alright, so one that I'm super excited to play with, and I part of me thinks that this set is just Wizards trolling us on some level, and that's Serum Visions. Like, why did they put that in this set, not Modern Masters 2? Like, I get it. You have to sell packs, but like, this is just Wizards going, ha ha ha, it was an F&M promo. Now it's in this set that some people won't even care about.
Well, it's the same with this and Ghostly Prison. They're both worth some money.
Yeah.
And they have tons of options to choose in other formats.
Yeah.
In Modern Masters 2. So they don't need to do that right now. And it gets a high enough print run to where they're not like screwing people over.
Yeah.
Same with this and Inquisition and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Inquisition really quickly. So Inquisition of Kozilek has been climbing in price for the past, 5 years, I think?
Mm-hmm.
Ever since Modern became a thing. And they've put it in this set. It doesn't match the flavor because there's no Eldrazi on Pollyanna or where the hell we are at.
Actually, there is a... wait, no, that's Hedron Matrix. It just has art of an Eldrazi.
Look, man, the Squid Lords are with us everywhere we go.
And that is true.
If there's ever only one pair of footprints in the sand, it's Imrakul carrying you. It's fine.
Wait, but then there'd be no footprints because you're just floating the entire time.
That's true. If there's ever these drag marks of squids in the sand, it's Imrakul taking you to feast.
Imrakul has him by your hand and just, come on,
yeah,
through the sand.
Yeah.
So,
don't worry about the flavor. Just keep the Eldrazi.
It,
Drag were cool. Meme are cool.
So it's a rare, which for draft reasons, it has to be a rare. You don't want
everybody whined because they don't understand deck game design.
Yeah, you don't want this floating around at uncommon like it was back in Rise of Eldrazi. Like, that's not a thing you want to have.
If it's a 1v1 format, you're like, oh, turn one, I Inquisition my opponent. If it's a 1v3 format, you're like, well, this is stupid.
Yeah.
So I'm going to turn one this Inquisition, and this guy next to me is going to hate me, and he might not even have anything I want to take.
Exactly.
And so this is stupid. So, like, if you put it at uncommon to make it more available, you actually weaken the quality of black overall pretty largely.
Yep.
If you put it at rare, every once in a while somebody's going to open a rare and have to decide, do I want to take this little bit of money? Because it's going to be so printed, it's going to drop in price. Do I want a little bit of money, or do I want to, like, win this draft pod? Probably win the draft pod.
Yeah.
Like, you're willing to let your rare go. Because it's going to drop in price. But it's, if they, like, everybody wanted it uncommon, I'm like, it ruins the draft experience. I'm not even going to draft this very much, I can tell you that. You don't want a throwaway black one, because then now they have to make the rest of the black ones that much better.
Yeah. And I love the art on it. So the old art made sense. It was, you know, an Eldrazi reaching into your brain and, like, unraveling your mind. You'll scream out your innermost thoughts to make it stop. This one, it's just kind of like an Eldrazi headbutt. And I'm not quite sure what to make of that.
It looks pretty sweet, man.
I mean, it's super sweet, but I just don't understand what's going on in the yard.
On the Eldrazi that's attacking, it's like an Eldrazi vampire, and he's got this, like, Kozilek hat thing on. Man.
It's almost like he's grabbing the vampire by the shoulder spikes and, like, slamming his head into his head.
Yeah.
It's brutal
art. Any
of
you Daredevil fans, like, you could probably sell this to Fisk. Like, this looks like the kind of art Fisk would buy.
Oh, man. Daredevil Season 2. So good. So good. Luke Cage comes out this year. So good. So good. All right. Justin, what are you excited to play with?
This is going to be a nostalgia card for me.
Oh, boy.
Juniper Order Ranger.
Yes! I'm so glad somebody brought this one up. I love this card.
Three generic, green and a white.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Human Knight 2/4. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, put a 1/1 counter on that creature and a 1/1 counter on Juniper Order Ranger.
Yes.
Once again, this is a card that represents green-white very well.
Mm-hmm.
Not on the, like, the overpowered side like the other card that I mentioned earlier was, but I actually played this in a green-white Sapperling deck. Thalid's deck when I first got into Magic.
Sure.
So seeing this card come back from, geez, Cold Snap into this format is just kind of like, oh,
God,
nostalgia.
It is that old, isn't it?
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. What's really cool is that every color pairing has either a rare, an uncommon, or a mythic associated with it. So it's everybody's got a card they can draft in their color pairing, which
again,
super sweet.
Makes the format really weird to draft.
That too.
It's like they just were like, what do we need to do with our multicolors? Well, we've got a dartboard.
Yeah.
That's how we'll figure it out. Boom.
Alright, Sean, what about you, man? What do you got here for us?
I've only played Vintage once, so I'm not a Vintage expert, but this Duretti card looks insane. Like, so from a non-vintage perspective, 3 mana, comes with 3 loyalty counters, plus 1, you get a 1/1 colors construct creature with Defender on the battlefield, so he kind of protects a little bit.
Sure.
Minus 1, you sacrifice any artifact, you destroy any artifact or creature. So he's pretty insane. You play him and you just go, make a construct, side construct, kill thing. Make construct, side construct, kill thing.
Yes.
I don't know if it's going to come much into play in this limited format, but in, like, Vintage, his minus 6... is you choose an artifact, target artifact card in a graveyard or artifact on the battlefield, and you put 3 tokens into play that's a copy of it. So if you can ultimate this guy against somebody, against, like, with your Black Lotus in the graveyard, you just go, like, I have 3 Black Lotuses in play. It just does something really stupid and really dangerous. I'm not positive how's he used. I'm not a Vintage expert. That would be something for Josh, but, like, the text is just insane.
Yeah, I think where this guy goes, so there's a deck in Grick and Vintage called Grixis Thieves, which plays Doc Faden and Notion Thief, and I think this card fits in there in some quantity. Maybe just as a one-of because it's so easy to find cards in your Vintage decks, but that is an incredibly powerful effect, like getting three Lotuses or 3 Moxen or hell, I'm gonna make 3 more Blightsteel Colossus because reasons.
Yeah.
You know, 44 power of impact wasn't enough.
In this format, I think you minus 6 and make 3 Platinum Angels.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, if one's in the yard, like...
Well, I that's a mythic too, right? I'm making three Psychosis Crawlers.
That car, I love Psychosis Crawlers.
Crawlers. That car was so, so fun. So good.
So fun.
So there was... I just lost it. Shoot, where'd it go? Hold on. Was it a black card? I think it was a black card I was excited about. Okay. So I'm really excited to see the return of Phyrexian Arena to printing. So one black enchantment. Begin your upkeep, you lose, draw a card, lose one life. The card itself is cool. I want one for my Gen deck in Modern, but it's the art on here that's really neat.
Sends a message.
It's showing Koth.
Fighting back.
So if you know the storyline, Koth saved Elspeth in her escape from New Phyrexia at that point to go, I guess, to Theros, or wherever she went in between the two planes. And he stayed back and was fighting off the
Phyrexia. It wasn't fully by choice. He saves her, and then she's hurt, and she planeswalks without planning to.
Yeah.
And so he turns around and goes, oh, crap. Like,
yeah,
I'm just me now. But he's the only... I'm pretty sure he's, like, the only living one on the planet.
I think you're right, and it's very much that he is there holding the door.
Yeah. And the flavor's like... A spark of resistance against the tide of corruption. Ugh, yeah, so just, much excitement.
I want to go back to New Phyrexia. I want to see Koth come back. I want to see a Phyrexianized Koth and just see what kind of like blue, like black red monster he's become. Super cool. Super cool. Justin, your turn.
Okay, next card.
We're just gonna go in a circle forever.
We talked the entire set. We talked about Leovold earlier. I think Leovold's the next card I'm pretty excited about. Leovold, Emissary of Trust. He's a soul type, black, green, blue. Mm-hmm. Legendary creature, elf advisor, 3/3. Each opponent can't draw more than one card each turn.
Shut up.
Whenever you or a permanent you control becomes the target of a spell or ability and an opponent controls, you may draw a card. Oh my god.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he is blue, black, green. Like,
he's not as broken as old Edric Spymaster.
Yeah, oh my god. Yeah.
That card was...
You got Edric in the conspiracy draft, you won the whole
card
thing.
Was stupid. I hit you and draw six?
Yeah.
he's not that, you know, as powerful as him.
Yeah, but he's still insane.
He's still insane. Being able to be like, oh, you're the monarch? I don't care.
At minimum, he typically replaces himself because there's not a whole lot of board wipes and sack effects.
Yeah.
So in order for them to get him off the board... It sucks. Like, I wish he said anytime a creature you control becomes the target of a spell, not a spell an opponent controls.
Yeah.
Because then you could actually start really breaking him.
Yeah, but there's a reason he doesn't say that for that very reason.
But because it's a spell an opponent controls, they just always fire their first removal spell at him.
Yeah.
So you're normally only going to draw, like, one card off of him. But it's still sweet.
Yeah, but again, the removal in this set looks really weak. Like, there's no just straight-up burn spell. It's all a bunch of, like, relatively expensive black removal. And
two-drop Avatar Woe, bro. Don't worry about it.
Oh, right, because they put eight cards in the graveyard first. Good point. Yeah. No, it's only six. I'm sorry.
But yeah, no, like, it's one of those things where if they ignore him, he gets out of hand. He stops people from just taking the game away with Monarch. Mm-hmm. And then instead of removing the creature that is the biggest threat... They have to remove Leovold, which, I mean, I guess...
I don't know, he is the biggest threat when he comes down.
Yeah, what I'm talking about is, like, you know, let's say you've got, you know, I'm just going to pick a random...
You just have a fat...
Big fatty.
Yeah.
It's like they can't remove the big fatty with their 6-mana removal spell. They've got to remove this 3/3.
Now, one of the only problems with him, though, is, like, if you're in a pod where multiple people have kind of, like, bent around the fact that at least for a couple turns they're going to be monarchs...
Mm-hmm.
Then now you take all the hate of the pod on yourself because you're locking all the other monarchs. So if those people are in the pod trying to fight over monarchs, this card basically makes you monarch number one as far as hatred.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like it's the only problem is like he really, his global effect really makes everybody else kind of be like, screw you. Like,
yeah. And the biggest downside to him is that he's three colors. Like he's blue, black, green.
Yeah.
And so kind of this is like a discussion we had back when we were reviewing Eldritch Moon, and we were talking about Tamiyo being like a first pick. She's three different colors of mana. So is this a card that you take first and then try and draft into this color combination? Because there really isn't a whole lot of fixing. Like you've got Birds of Paradise, you've got a Conspiracy that allows you to generate some different colors of mana, I believe, and you have Evolving Wilds. and other than that, there's no mana fixing. Except at the rare level, which you get with
At rare and mythic, there's some options.
Except like Orchard. But that's about it.
There is a conspiracy that's actually worth mentioning. Emissary's Ploy. Before drawing your opening hand, choose 1, 2, or 3. You may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast creature spells with converted mana cost equal to the chosen number. So if you have Emissary's Ploy, then, which is funny because it's Leovold, then Leovold becomes way better.
Damn it. So, and Leovold's a mythic,
there's also
right?
Like, there's also like Borderland Explorer. Like, there's a few ways you can fix. It's definitely not ideal.
Yeah, so I don't know if I'd be going on my way to try and pull this off. But
if you have him, the conspiracy Justin just mentioned, like, nobody else is really probably drafting that card because most people's decks are going to be pretty well designed for one and two colors, so they won't really need that conspiracy.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm not going to probably draft this set too much, but I am excited to see if they put Volatile Chimera and some cubes. Volatile Chimera gives you a reanimation deck, this other option.
Oh, that card is so sweet.
Yep. So it's 3 mana, 2 and a red for a 3/2, which
nice
is fine.
Nice segue there, Sean. That's good.
Yeah.
Where's this guy? What color?
Red rare.
Oh, that's right. That's okay.
Before you shuffle your deck to start the game, you may reveal this card from your deck and exile three or more creature cards you drafted that aren't in your deck. Pay 1 and a red whenever he's in play. Choose a card at random you exiled with cards named Volatile Chimera. Volatile Chimera becomes a copy of that card and gains this ability. So this is like in cube, just another reanimation spell. You're like, oh, I didn't get my reanimate. Well, I'll just play this Volatile Chimera and I'll like put my Grizzlebrand and these other two things in exile.
Yes.
If you started getting into that package and you never actually drew the reanimation spell. Also, it's just stupidly good.
Yeah.
You play this because it's an instant speed. It's not a sorcery speed ability. So you're just like, all right, I'm going to play this 3/2 and then pass. And if you pass back to me, I'm going to go like, all right, pay 2, reveal Imrakul at random, attack you. 15, you annihilate. Like, it's just so good.
Getcha.
I just think it'll be sweet in cube.
Yeah, awesome. definitely sweet. So I think I'll do the last one here. We can kind of move on to just general tips when it comes to playing a conspiracy draft here.
Or just some of the cards that are insane from value wise.
I've got one more to talk about.
Okay, well, let's do... So I'll do this last one, and then we'll do, like, the insane value cards, and then we'll move on to gameplay tips.
Yeah.
Because we're not... Yeah, we got plenty of time. You guys are in for the long haul. You guys want to listen to all of this. So Recruiter of the Guard is my next pick here. It's a 2 and a white 1/1 human soldier. When it enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a creature card with power. Oh, wait, I mean toughness, 2 or less. Reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. Sorry, guys, this is not Imperial Recruiter. It goes and gets Imperial Recruiter.
It's better than most.
It is better than.
It can go get Flicker Wisp.
Yeah, it can go get New Thalia, or it can go get Old Thalia.
Yeah.
And New Thalia.
Yeah,
so,
Thalia.
Like, this is the ultimate tutor in the white or the white black Death and Taxes deck in Legacy.
That deck got gas.
Yeah, so many cards in this set that actually power that deck up. Obviously, they can't reprint Imperial Recruiter. It's a Portals card. It's worth about $4 million right now. And that really only goes in one deck. It's Imperial Painter. It goes and gets Painter Servant, and then you kill them with the Grindstone combo. I don't think that they needed to print something that could go and just enable that even more.
Yeah, but I mean, like, this kind of sends a message that, like, now this might be a way that they might start moving forward. They're gonna test the waters. Like, can we address the reserve list with this?
Yeah, yeah,
so
absolutely.
We're going to make functional reprints of cards, which people have mentioned before. So they're doing it with one card. We're going to see what it does to Imperial Recruiter if we make Recruiter of the Guard.
Yeah.
And so I think it's an interesting, like, cool little test that they're doing.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Justin, you had one more card you wanted to hit. What do you got?
Adriana, Captain of the Guard.
Ooh, she's hot. figuratively and literally.
Okay.
She's got this Brain of Tarth thing going on. I'm a fan.
Oh, God.
Don't hate.
So
don't hate.
3 mana, red and white. For total of 5.
Yeah, I was about to say that's definitely not her mana card.
3 generic. 1 red, 1 white.
Give me a 3 mana 4/4 with this ability. Holy crap.
Too powerful. Legendary creature, knight human. Got melee. And then, other creatures you control have melee. 4/4.
I have 5 guys.
Yeah.
Send them all different directions. They all just get +5/+5. Holy crap.
Yep.
or each opponent, I'm sorry, they each gets got +3/+3. It's ridiculous.
Only +3/+3, Alex.
Yeah, this card is bonkers.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's the exemplary card for representing her story, because she has started the resistance that's just like, you know what? We can't have monarchs anymore. This just doesn't work. Every time we get a monarch, they abuse their power, then they get killed, and we get a new monarch, and then they abuse their power over and over and over
again. So you're saying that she's in opposition to Queen Marchesa?
Yes.
Queen Bey, yep. First of her name, doing her best Khaleesi impersonation?
Yep. In fact, the hero of the story, Queen Marchesa being the villain.
Boo. Sean, what do you got? Not to cut you off, but boo. Villains rule.
Well, a lot of the stuff I'm excited for is just to see what it does in older formats, even though I don't play them very often.
Sure.
Sanctum Prelate is a card I'm super excited for.
Oh, yeah.
This is the other Death and Taxes card. It's might be the most impactful card they printed for older formats that isn't a reprint.
Yeah. This is our true nemesis of the set, I think.
Yeah, this is our true name, which sadly wasn't in this set, even though I've been raving it should be in this one, because a multiplayer set's when you want to print two name, but whatever.
Yep.
As Sanctum Prelate enters the battlefield, choose a number. Non-creature spells with converted mana cost equal to the chosen number can't be cast. It's a 2/2 human cleric, and it's 3 mana. So it goes right into these Death and Taxes decks. They just vial it in, and if they have a good board state, they name 4, so the Mihirakul's decks can't play Planeswalkers or board wipes against against other control decks.
Holy,
if you haven't stuck things, you could just name 5. Like, it doesn't have a limit on what you name, so you can name 5 so they can't cast Force of Wills. If you have a good board state and they don't have the top lock set up yet, you can like name 1 so they can't play Sensei's top, or 2 so they can't play, like, it's just,
if you have multiple of these things in play,
it's not legendary.
No.
And you can blink it. There's a lot of ways that deck can blink things, so you could just blink this thing later and bring it back. And this card is insane.
You can't cast Show and Tell Anymore, which is on the set. You can't cast Sneak Attack. You can't cast Jace.
Yeah, you name 4 against Mihirakul's, and they can't cast their win cons
What is the CMC of Enter the Infinite? 13? 11? Like, just
something like that. I think it's like 11.
Stupid number.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to call this one be the last card we're going to talk about, just because I think this is the funniest one because of the ultra potential, and it's Entourage of Trest. 4 and a green, 4/4 elf soldier. When it enters the battlefield, you become the monarch, and it can block an additional creature each combat as long as you're the monarch. Pretty cool. The art, though, is what gets me. It's like these three guys rolling up. It's very much the Show Entourage, and I kind of want to get some of the squad altered on this and have like Drew, Mike, and Dustin on these guys. Just rolling up. shout out to the squad.
I don't know if this card can fit their grandeur.
No, definitely not. It's a common, so it's certainly underneath their station.
We're gonna say grandeur's the problem.
Yes.
They are
definitely more fitting of a mythic, kind of like Subterranean Tremors.
I'm thinking maybe we need the space of a blend card to really fit the scope of these men.
Big furry monster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, perfect. Yeah, just we really need to be able to fit the scope of what these men are. So I don't know if we're on this card.
There is one other card that I did notice that's worth mentioning because of something we talked about earlier. I think this might be the only card that affects the draft like the old conspiracy cards did. And it's Leovold's Operative. It's right above Entourage of Trest if we're on Mythic. Spoiler. When you draft it face up. And as long as it's face up, you can draft 2 cards from a booster pack, and then you skip the next booster pack that you're past.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
If you ever get in one of those situations where you just have like 2 sweet cards and you just can't make up your mind.
How many times in a draft have you guys ever said, I wish I could take 6 cards out of this pack and just skip the next couple?
This card's not that good. This card is, you draft it face up. As you draft a card. Yeah, never mind. I was reading it as 1 solid line of text. So later on, you can do it.
Yeah. So that's just super neat.
It's a 3/3/2.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, the card's not super great, but it does have a really cool effect that, you know, interacts with the draft. It's at common level, so we're going to see, you know, maybe a couple every pod.
Mm-hmm. This regicide card is stupid.
I just read that one too.
It's so complicated.
Yeah, so for a black instant, single black instant, reveal it as you draft it. The player to your right chooses a color. You choose another color. Then the player to your left chooses a third color. Destroy target creature that's one or more of the colors as you drafted cards named regicide.
So you can destroy 3 out of 5 colors for 1 mana.
Common. It doesn't say another color. You just say, like, I choose black. I choose black. I choose black as well. Like, unless
it says, it says another color.
Yeah.
Okay, so it needs to be
different.
So, yeah, it's just like the person to your right. And also you can use, if this is like pack 2, you get to get a good read off your opponent what their primary color is.
Oh, yeah.
Because the person to your right is not going to choose their primary color.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're going to choose a color you're not in because it means a higher probability of evading other players.
Mm-hmm.
The person to your left is going to choose a color that's not the one they're in.
Yep.
So if your person to your right name's white, then you know that they're either in blue, green, or red or something. Or black. Right.
Right.
They're in blue, green, red, or black. If you've been paying attention, you might have a little bit of a read off which of those they are.
Mm-hmm.
Then it comes to you, and you choose a color that's not what you're in, just because you know you've been passing those cards. So
yep.
If you're in black, white, and they said white, then you don't want to say black, so you'll say blue.
Yep.
And then the person to your left will say another color, and you know that they're not in that color.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to name their own.
So no,
like, it gives you a cool table read.
It's, yeah, and the art is super neat too. This is the moment where Kaya actually kills King Brago under the direction of Queen Marchesa, aka Queen Bey, aka first of her name, aka Khaleesi. I'm gonna keep doing that the entire time. All right, so the set is super super sweet. It's got some serious value too. We've got Inquisition of Kozilek, Serum Visions, Berserk, Show and Tell.
Yeah, we didn't even mention those.
Like, yeah.
They printed Berserk and Show and Tell, which were respectively, I think, around $70 and $90 or $100 for those two cards.
So those are your Chase Mythics right there. Just there's tons of value in just weird little places. You know, great commander cards, great eternal cards.
And they acknowledge that they don't look at the secondary market when they print cards, but I think it was really cool that they put Sneak Attack in Eternal Masters because it was the cheaper of Show and Tell and Sneak Attack. And it didn't impact the whole board. Show and Tell has more of a multiplayer feel and is the more expensive. This is the more printed set.
Yeah. I do like the fact that they printed Overrun in this set. A card's too powerful for core sets they deemed. So I'm wondering if this is them testing this card to come back in like a limited environment within standard sets.
I don't think so. I think it's them throwing a bone to the other players, and then also like you need to be able to finish some people off some.
The art for this negate, sorry, just
that's
like sweet.
Yeah,
okay.
It's not new art.
I actually hate that art so bad. It just looks like the dude's like pacemaker's failing, and the other dude's like, oh no, press your help alert button. Like, this just looks like a grandma.
Help, I'm falling and I can't give up.
She's like,
life alert here, ma'am.
Yeah, why did we buy you that life alert? Like, I hate it.
Oh man, that is fun. That is fun. Alright, so we could go on for hours probably about all the cards in the set. It's a really great set. It's worth a full set review, but it's so limited that that's, you know, not worth the time that it would take to put into it. But this set looks really, really sweet.
How cool would it be to get a playmat of my Jeering Homunculus? Have the flavor text in italics at the bottom, and at the top just write, do you really think I want to talk to you? And just have that be my playmat. The little blue guy.
All right,
someone who'll do that for you.
I'm starting a GoFundMe for the Homunculus t-shirt for Sean.
Oh, that's my new tank top. I'm gonna get a Jeering Homunculus tank top this guy throwing his little middle finger.
It needs to be like him and Fibblethip, like eye to eye, just like bumping into each other.
He's so cool.
Sean represents the homunculus of the world. Homunculus lives matter.
He's adorable.
He's incredibly
adorable. Angry. And these people are just like turning their heads.
He probably, you know, doesn't smell very nice either. Is he wearing pants? I can't quite tell.
No, he's naked.
I'm pretty sure he's wearing pants.
No, that's a shadow of his big old head.
No, I'm pretty sure those are pants. He's got like these knee straps on too.
Yeah, well,
like
he's got knee straps on so he can get down low and punch somebody if he needs to.
Oh man, those are shorts, man.
Boo. That's all right. They can't have like homunculus junk and a middle finger in one picture. They got a baby step.
One or the other.
Yeah.
The junk or the
finger. They brought it in like this homunculus was just hanging free with his middle finger up, and Rosewater's like, you can't have both. We're a liberal company, but we're not that liberal.
You know what happened is someone was watching Watchmen and saw Dr. Manhattan and went, that.
Another thing that I'm kind of curious about is like all the fruit on the ground.
People throw it at him because he's so mean and oinery. Like,
Did they throw it at him or did he?
Yeah, they throw it at him because they all hated him as well.
Okay.
Yeah, he's getting stuff thrown at him and he's still just calling people out because he doesn't care. With his like, he's got jacked up teeth like I do. Like, this guy is beautiful. I want this.
All right.
This guy's my best friend.
Do we have a matching eye color?
No, sadly.
Oh no,
we got hazel and blue.
Yeah. Well, we can't. 3 to 5 is not bad.
We can alter it. Give it a beard. Give it a hazel eye.
Oh, Gus, I had a beard. It'd be adorable.
Oh man, can we start one of those petition acts where we go like in the next story arc, Jace adopts this guy? Can we do that? Like Jace and Liliana like rescue him from the streets. I want that so bad.
Return to Pollyanno. There's no conspiracy this time. It's just an actual set, guys.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about actually drafting this set. So, unlike usual drafts, is that you're not seeing other people's cards. You have a very coherent idea of what you're doing with your deck. What would you guys say are some tips for people who maybe haven't drafted a set like this before when it comes to actually drafting this set?
Stay in your color unless you have a good reason not to. Whatever colors you've decided. Like, I'm so tired of people being like, I draft 4-color good stuff. I'm just gonna, like, I just pick the best card in every format and just hope my mana base works out. And then, you screwed over 3 other players.
I mean, that's pretty much every draft format I've ever played in.
In this draft, though, like, it is more so than ever that you want to be flexible and you want to draft the best card available for the first few picks because other players are going to be doing that kind of thing, so you need to be able to meld around them.
Yes.
And there's cards that pay off these other random
cards. I should clarify, once you have identified your color, like if you get pack 2 and, you're in blue-white and then, or, because blue-white flyers is always a deck in draft.
It's always good. Sphinx of Magosi.
And then like you open up and you see the Volatile Chimera. For the love of God, stay with blue white.
In draft in general, like you don't need to make that decision at the beginning of pack 2.
Yeah.
It's like middle into pack 2 that you really need to be locked in. You should know a primary color, but your secondary color should be staying open because pack 2 is when you start getting signals from the other side. So that would be like making a decision with half your information.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think it's good to kind of read what you've been sending to the person next to you and then whenever the packs flip order, take that into account and kind of finalize. You probably want to finalize about 5 or 6 picks into pack 2 or get a pretty sound idea. But you just always want to kind of stay open, especially it's one thing at like a Pro Tour level tournament because people are very consistent with their drafting. But if you're drafting at a shop, which is most of our listeners, like you don't want to like get in too early, because then you have people who are like playing these really bad cards because they're like, well, I don't want to like get off my color.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it turns out somebody else did something crazy, and you have to be able to morph around it.
Yeah.
I would say you treat this draft a lot like Innistrad drafts, the Innistrad casual drafts, where you pay attention to the things that are face up that people are taking around you.
Like the flip cards,
like the werewolves.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Because like if the person to your left who's passing you packs, pack one, pick one, takes like Arlen Cord or takes a red rare flip or a green rare flip, or the white flips into a 4/4.
I'm blanking on the name of it too.
The Lone Rider.
Yeah.
In local store drafts, people are less likely to hop off of big cards like that early. So if your person to your left takes an Arlen Cord, you know they're going to probably stay in that red-green because most people at those shops really want to play their
try and force into it.
They're going to try to force into it. So that kind of sends you a signal. So if somebody flips and reveals one of these little flip-reveal tricky cards, then you need to pay attention because they're not taking it out of color in most cases. Most of them don't do anything out of color.
Yeah.
So you're still having a situation where they're revealing it and they're taking something in color.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How highly do you guys... I mean, Justin, did you draft the original one of this?
The original...
Original Conspiracy.
No, I never had a chance. Everyone would always complain, oh, Conspiracy Draft is so fun, but the playing is so awful.
Well, they were right.
And they probably were. I think.
Well, they were.
And I think
were
that I right. wouldn't have enjoyed the games themselves.
Okay. So,
but I never had. So I had, but I never had a chance because no one ever wanted to okay. play it.
Yeah,
I did it a couple times.
So okay, so this question is more for Sean then. How highly, and I know my own personal answer to this. How highly do you take the conspiracies when it come when they come up?
Most of the conspiracies you're not taking very highly. Because most of them are really incremental values that you're getting.
Yes.
So they're going to be like, they're going to be your mid-pack picks. Or they're a lot, there's sometimes going to be pack picks that wheel.
Yeah.
Especially a lot of these hidden agendas, because these hidden agendas involve you naming like a card. So now you have to draw that card for this conspiracy to do anything.
Yes. Unfortunately, those are all like common, so you've got a better shot of hitting them.
Well, the hidden agendas, you name the card at the beginning of the game.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Now you have to draw that card.
Yeah.
So if I name, like, I don't want to name a hidden agenda on a crappy card that I have three of. I want to name it on my good card that I have one of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now I have to draw that one of.
Yeah.
So the problem is, like, yes, it doesn't go into your 40-card count, but it is part of your 45-card pool. So,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
you're now spending a pool pick on this card that you're like, hopefully I draw the card I named with it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the rares and mythics are insane, and that's the way it was before. I really don't, I still, I've read it a million times, and I don't understand why Hold the Perimeter is a rare. At your first upkeep, you get a 1/2 defender, and then every opponent's upkeep, that player gets a 1/1 goblin.
Probably because you just don't want that.
Well, it's the first upkeep.
Multiple effects, multiple of that effect going off
first upkeep,
every
yeah.
game. Like, if three people have this and it just happens to go off, like, that's yeah. a pretty detrimental thing to the board state.
But the thing is, like, at a rare level, like, you don't want that early because a lot of the things in the format, a lot of these creatures have two power.
Yeah.
So your 1/2 just dies to most things, so you just gave away 3/1/1s.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of, like, ping the board for one effects.
Yeah, and all of your hidden agenda cards that, you know, have a card attached to them name-wise, the effect is so incremental. Like, gain indestructible, draw a card, make a zombie, fire breathing, get a +1/+1 counter on it. Just really incremental effects that you probably don't want to waste your picks on.
Well, no, they're actually all really good. Like, I mean, every combat, putting a 1/1 counter on the creatures you name, so if you, that's the kind of card that you name want to name three garbage creatures you have.
That's
because
true.
That effect's insane. So, like, these do reward more the bad creatures, but it's still one of those things where you probably don't take them super early. Like, you want to take them later when you know you have a creature that you have two or three of.
Yeah.
Because
there's some drafts where you only have one creature you have two of and the rest of them singletons, and then you really don't want that.
Yeah, I agree.
But the rares are a lot better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as political-wise, you know, playing the game, the last go-around is that there was no real incentive for you to not gang up on one player at a time and, like, team up with your buddies and take out one person and sort of, you know, last man standing or whoever. Is that going to affect the way that you guys draft this at all? Like, you know, heavily taking the you become the monarch cards or, you know, taking the cards that are going to maybe steer the game. Like, the one that comes to mind most often is it's the one mana illusion of choice. It's a one blue instant. You choose how each player votes this turn and you draw a card. Is something like that you're going to take aggressively to go with other voting cards and really put a target on your head because that's how your deck works? Or are you going to stay away from cards like that and let the rest of the table kind of fight over the political aspect of the game?
You'll take that card after you've taken some voting cards. That card is a lot worse right now because the voting cards only impact the other players.
Yeah.
So you don't get as much of a payoff by impacting your opponent's cards that are being voted on because you're still being impacted.
Sure, yeah.
But, I mean, that card, it was a good follow-up to if you drafted some voting cards already. The politics aspect... I would say if you're going to go play Conspiracy, don't go play unless you're playing somewhere where you think a couple friends are going to be playing also.
Yeah.
Just so you don't get in that situation. But also don't be the jerk who goes into the match and says, all right, let's not attack each other. Like, don't be that guy. Like,
yeah.
That's not fun. Like, don't do that. I do think it's a little more balanced as far as not encouraging that because of the Monarch effect.
Mm-hmm.
But just if you're building a deck and you're in a pod that you are alone in, like you don't know the other people and there's any chance the other people know each other, then you really want to build your deck in a way that is able to defend on multiple fronts. So like Vigilance becomes a better mechanic than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
High toughness over high power becomes better than it used to be.
Yeah.
Whereas in a traditional draft, Vigilance doesn't mean a whole lot on one random creature, and this one it does.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you're able to pressure one of their friends that might be weak while still blocking the friend that's not weak.
Mm-hmm.
It is really weird and political. I do feel like some of the cards look like it'll be a little more balanced, but you will run into it sometimes.
Yeah.
And you just have to kind of weigh that out. Are you okay with running into that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I would only draft those people that I know, you know.
Yeah, that'd be my goal.
Yeah, like now, three of you guys and one other guy, like, I'm down to jam some games.
But that's the problem, is it's not drafted that way. You're in an 8-person draft pod, and then the seats are assigned
in
groups of 4. So you want to go in where, like, you're at a shop with people you know. So even if you're not good friends with somebody, you're at a table with relatively familiar faces, so people aren't going to try to probably alienate you.
Yeah,
Of course, sometimes you also have situations like what I expect to face, where I'll go sit down, and most of those people will be like, let's get that guy. And they might not know each other, but they're still going to say, let's get that guy.
Because they know you from the podcast, and they already hate you for your cynical nature.
Yeah, they know me from the podcast. They know me from just my general jovial personality.
You walk in, it's like, there's Mythofid.
Yeah, the guy who's constantly shouting about how much this little, like, homunculus that flips everybody off is awesome is also the guy that gets attacked by strangers.
But even with people saying, hey, let's all get that guy, I mean, then they're agreeing to do things like not play voting cards, because all of the voting cards, or I shouldn't say all of, but most of the voting cards say, you know, each opponent, you know, this effect happens to them and it's awful.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just like they for someone to choose to gang up on people, they're cut out of a lot of deck options. They can't do melee. They have to be careful on the council dilemmas cards that they're playing if they're planning on ganging up on people.
Well, the melee effect, you just end up starting to throw away random tokens to your buddies.
Yeah.
That just take the one or chump with a 0/4 and things like that, just so you can pump your melee guy.
Yeah, but it is harder to play around. You know, it's like, but if you're sacrificing your tokens and stuff to, you know,
well, you swing it to your friend has a block that doesn't kill your token.
Yeah.
Your friend takes the one, or your friend has a 0/4.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that then, like, you just always lose to that friend if they're, you know, blocking the free kills that you're giving them.
That's why I just said, you're not doing that.
Yeah.
You're attacking in when they're going to take the one, mm-hmm. or they have a 0/4, so your 1/1 does not die.
Gotcha.
You don't swing in whenever your opponent, with a 3/3 into your opponent. If your opponent has the ability to block, your friend's probably not going to just take the 3. But you will have tables where the guy will be able to throw a nothing into somebody just to get the count up, and then they'll take it. They'll just take the one, or they'll block with something that doesn't kill it, and they'll bounce off each other. There's a lot of creatures that bounce off each other.
Yeah.
But it does balance things a little bit more, because it does force you to start attacking a little bit more, so now your crackbacks from the person you're attacking are a little bit more open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then the Monarch effect in general, it's kind of like we said, like, yeah, you might not want to knock your friend out at first, but eventually you want to win the pod. So do you really want your friend to be Monarch for 5 turns in a row?
Yeah,
I think so. Do you want to have free Phyrexian Arenas for 5 turns? Probably not.
Yeah, but I think it's you know, we can, there's definitely the other side of the thing where a lot of these common cards just say you become the Monarch. I think that's going to be changing hands so often that unless the game just stalls out and nobody can really play a spell or just running out of gas, I think that's when you're going to run into your situations of one person is the Monarch consistently. But hopefully that won't happen. And I really hope it doesn't.
You probably won't run into that very much, but be careful, because if you're going in a pod with not a lot of people you know, be careful just grabbing the Monarch all the time, because you're gonna, like, run into situations where you take the Monarch and now you got a target. Like, if you're in a table of unknowns, nobody's on a team, all 4 people are complete strangers.
Yeah.
First person to take the Monarch crown, because that's the big, like, theme, he's going to get the most hate from the strangers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even if they're not ahead on board, they're going to take the crown, which you've been hyping up as what you're not supposed to be, is the big, like, fight. And so then, like, you're going to have a bigger issue over it. So, like, you're going to get a lot of players. I would be, if I'm drafting it, I'm going to be careful not to take too many Monarch cards unless I have some really good defense in my deck.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be an aggro deck that has a bunch of cards say take the crown, because my guys need to be swinging, and if I have the crown, I'm getting swung back at by 3 other people.
Yeah, for sure.
Also, aggro's trash in this.
Aggro's
not going to be able to kill all 3 opponents.
Yeah.
Well, which is, I think it's pretty interesting that none of the red, none of the green cards, no, I take that back. There is a green card that makes you the Monarch. But
Entourage.
Yeah, but for the most part, red, green, and white, which are your typical aggro colors, don't have too many you're the Monarch effects. I think there might be 1 or 2 white cards that make you the Monarch.
I think it's pretty even across the board as far as Monarch.
Yeah, it's certainly not like a even split, but it's
pretty
even
close enough. Yeah, it's close enough to where there's not a huge favor in one color or the other.
Yeah.
All I know is I'm really excited for people to like pass this garbage fire card.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Hoping it wheels, and then I get it like six picks later before it finishes the wheel, and I'm like, I'll take 3 mana, 6 damage to a creature. Thanks.
Yes. And I love how it just like some cards you just compare to just call garbage fires. This one actually is garbage fire.
It's like you're gonna open your pack one and you're gonna like take a good card and you're gonna see this garbage fire and you're like, oh, somebody's gonna get such gas before this comes back. Like even if you're in red, you're like, this guy to my right's gonna take it and it's gonna deal 7. This is the worst.
Yeah, so it's reveal it as you draft it and note how many cards you've drafted this draft round, including garbage fire. Garbage fire deals damage to target creature equal to the highest number you noted for cards named garbage
fire. Now, if you pack one, get a garbage fire for 5 or 6, then you can pick first every other garbage fire after that, and they all do the 5 or 6.
The highest number you noted. Oh, 4. Okay, I thought it was referring to itself at that point.
So if I pack one and I get lucky and I get a garbage fire that is 5 other cards in garbage fire, so it deals 6 to a creature, right? Then every garbage fire I take after that deals 6.
Yeah,
because if I open my first pack of pack 2 and my first pick in that pack is garbage fire, the 1 does not replace the 6. The 6 is the highest.
Yeah, it goes halfway through the pack. So
the card gets way better if you get value pack 1 on garbage fire, because now you can take these other garbage fires and be like, the 6 kills pretty much everything in the set.
I hadn't thought about that. I'll be curious to see if that affects, you know, how people... I mean, it's obviously going to go a little bit later than in normal, so I wonder how late people will let that go before... Yeah, and it's also a common, so how late people go before they say, okay, this is already at... 8.
Yeah. So if I'm drafting next to someone and they pack one, get a garbage fire because they have to reveal it for like 6, and then I sit down with them at a pod and they turn one mountain, I'm on red alert because I mean they might have got multiple garbage fires and I might be getting blown out because garbage fires are common. So like if they have the ability to really get there's a couple cards that like are very situational. In some situations they're very average. In some situations they're absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And I love it.
I'm looking for it, and I'm just throwing this out because it's a flavor win for me. I believe they brought back the creature type pirate in this set somewhere, and I'm trying to find the card now.
Oh, I didn't remember seeing a pirate.
Because somebody talked about it on Mark Wilder's Tumblr blog. Oh, why can't I find it? I'm so sad now. There's vampires and advisors and snakes and soldiers and rats.
Probably the best non-rare in this whole set is Ghostly Prison.
Yeah. Ghostly Prison's sweet.
Yeah, like whenever you have 3 other people that all have to pay an extra cost to attack you, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's one way to get around the goad mechanic. And like if I goad Alex's creature and Justin has a Ghostly Prison, but Alex wants to attack me, then if in his main phase Alex taps out his mana, he physically can't attack Justin.
Well,
so he has to attack me.
It actually says that if there's a mana cost to attack a player, your goaded creature doesn't have to attack that player, or that would be considered a situation where he would still be able to attack you.
That's what I just said.
Even without having to worry about the mana.
Oh, like, you can't force him to pay the cost. Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, Ghostly Prison locks it to where the goad becomes a lot worse.
Definitely does. God, where's the... I might have read that wrong. I might have read there were pirates in this set. That's really disappointing. All right. So, anyway. I think we're about ready to wrap this up. So, round table one more time. The number one card that you're wanting to open and play with in Conspiracy Take the Crown. What is it for you guys? Justin, you're first.
Skip me for now.
Nope, you're
Come
on the spot. No. That's why I'm going last.
I can tell you one of my least exciting.
Okay, what's your least exciting?
This Hymn of the Wilds, it's really good, but it says I can't play spells.
Yeah,
conspiracy that the first creature you cast each turn costs 1 less to cast. That's a really powerful effect. But not being able to play spells is really
bad.
You
better have a lot of dumpster
fire. That card's a huge trap. Like,
I got my card that I'm excited about.
All right, lay it on us.
Silvala, Heart of the Wilds.
The mythic, yeah.
One generic green and 2 green.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever another creature enters the battlefield, its controller may draw a card if its power is greater than each other creature's power.
Yes.
Pay green tap, add X mana in any combination of colors to your mana pool, where X is the greatest power among creatures you control.
Yeah, she's...
bonkers.
She makes a lot of mana. Yeah. She's going to be a really good green commander, for sure.
I'm excited for pack one, picking one, and building around Wild Pear. I love that card.
Wild Pear is so cool.
Wild Pear is so
fun. I love that they brought that back, and the art on it is pretty sweet, too.
So, for anybody who doesn't know, Wild Pear is 4 and 2 green. It's an enchantment. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield, if you cast it from your hand, you can search your library for a creature with the same total power and toughness and put it onto the battlefield if you do shuffle your library. So that means you add their power and toughness, look for one that has a matching total.
Yeah, there was a...
So 5-5 for find a 0-10.
Yeah, there was a standard deck at one point that I think ran this as its kill condition.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Card's insane.
I'm blanking on what it is.
Whenever something says you get to search your library for and then play it for free, it's broken.
Yeah, that is very true.
I like that it's the old Explosive Vegetation art too. That art's sweet.
So my big one that I'm wanting to play with, it's Psychosis Crawler. Because I want to have a lot of effects that draw me extra cards, and like Psychosis Crawler is just nutty when he gets working. So anything that says draw extra cards, I'm all in on Psychosis Crawler.
I love anytime they put Merfolk Looter in a set, because you play against players who are less competitive and they don't understand Merfolk Looter is insane, and so you'll win a game. And you'll know the reason you won the game is you had Merfolk Looter for 10 turns. But nobody else will realize that's why you won the game.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, well, I just looted 10 times, but that's probably what it was. Turn 2 and Merfolk Looter is like one of the most fun things in limited
magic. Yeah, give me the Psychosis Crawler, Call Me of the Crescent Moon deck, and just like turbo fog the whole board out.
Get out of here.
So good. So good. And I'm still confused on why they put Deceiver Exarch in this set. I don't understand.
It's just a really good tempo card.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's just card. When they spoiled it, I went, oh boy, maybe they put Splinter in this set just to spite me more. But not.
They're probably put some kind of Mana War in this set, and they're like, man, Reflector Mage, let's just give them something to tap something for a turn.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that about does it for our Conspiracy 2 Electric Boogaloo review, precursor, whatever you want to call it. I'm going to draft this at least once, three times.
I'll do it once and see how it plays out. It looks like it's better than the last one as far as design goes.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I'm excited to see if it can do anything. Here's my final thought on Conspiracy 2. So we know Duretti, the new Planeswalker Duretti. Mm-hmm. When he planeswalks, he has that chair, right? Mm-hmm. When he planeswalks, does the chair go with him?
Yeah, it's Ethan Hawke.
Does Jace planeswalk naked?
Well, their clothes are one thing. Like, clothes are one thing, but something he's sitting
on. No, he's attached in that chair. Like, he's strapped in that thing. That's close.
Okay, all right.
I mean, like...
that's an interesting thought.
They bring their weapons, any items that they have on them. So it stands to reason that people are capable...
You guys are poking holes in the joke here. Come on, guys.
When Stephen Hawking goes to give a speech, does he bring his chair? Yes. Yes, he does.
Do you guys think Stephen Hawking plays magic in any capacity? Did he knows of magic?
No, that guy does not play magic. He knows of it, but he's way too smart to play magic.
Oh, man. Stephen Hawking, if you're out there listening, come be on the show. Just Skype in. Be sweet.
I mean, he'd probably be really good at the game, but I think his brain's doing way too many other things to ever play this game.
I mean, if he's going to break the Eldritch Evolution deck, you know, it's going to be him.
I just want to see him come on the show and insult you, a lot.
I mean, he's going to insult all of us. If you listen to that guy talk, he is a... So, big thanks to Sean and Justin for coming on tonight. Might have some changes coming up to the show here in the next couple of weeks. We've got some scheduling things coming up, people going back to school, new jobs and things like that. But we will keep bringing you the informative and entertaining content that you have come to know and love from the channel. So thanks for coming on tonight, guys.
Glad to be on.
Yeah.
Yep. Glad to be here.
Sean's just like, yep, thanks.
I'm just reading cards now.
He's figuring out his Mythalfib cosplay.
Man, that guy's so cool. Send me all your Mythalfibs that you don't want to keep. I want to collect that card.
There you go.
I want the original art of that card. I've never cared about original art of any card. I want the original art of this really grumpy little blue man. So bad.
You can make a Mythalfib cosplay out of Mythalfib cards. The Mythalfib suit.
I would give him his little middle finger, too.
There you go. Nice. Well, since Steven's not here, you can't say it just yet. So, if you enjoy the show, go find us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Twitch, on YouTube. Just search the EOT Newsflash in any capacity. You will find us on any of those. got some great feedback on our brewery episode that we did. I've already got one suggestion for next month, and it is the 3/3 for 3 artifact that or horror that when it gets targeted by a spell or ability, your opponent controls, you exile it, and you can cast from exile. Mm-hmm. Eternal Scourge, I think is what the name is.
Yeah, Eternal Scourge.
They want us to brew with it in standard.
We'll find something.
We'll figure something out. So
alrighty.
Come up with more ideas for that, guys, and let us know.
We'll do a vote on it, and we'll see what our popular opinion is. If you have card ideas for that one.
Yeah, send it to us on Facebook, on Twitter. Send them all those ideas.
For you, Commander kids, get this. If you're in black, this Spy Kit card. I completely forgot about this.
Oh, Spy Kit's so cool!
2-mana equipment, 2 to equip. Equipped creature gets +1/+1 and has the names of all non-legendary creature cards in addition to its other name. So if you equip your creature with it, and then you sever the bloodline it, you kill every creature on the battlefield. If you bio-blight it and it kills everything that would be bio-blightable, it's so cool.
Yeah, the video that where Toy Community College spoiled that was really sweet. I think they got Sprinkle, what is her first name? The cosplayer.
Oh, I don't know her first name, I've never seen her around.
Yeah, but she dressed up as Delver of Secrets, a Noble Hierarch, Eternal Witness, and Marchesa. In the video. Very, very, very cool. Christine Sprinkle. So shout out to her. And yeah, go watch that.
It's a cool effect. That's one thing I've always loved from like magic books, like just novels that are like fantasy based.
Yeah.
Is that the name is really important. And this card like really catches that flavor.
Yeah.
That you're able, if this spy gets that name, it can really mess with what you're doing.
Yeah. Super, super cool card. So that's it for tonight. We're going to be coming back with our 52nd episode, our unofficial 1-year anniversary. Timing is a little bit off, fuzzy, timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly stuff. That's okay. It's going to be great. We'll have something exciting for you guys. And be on the lookout for my deck tech and tournament report from the IQL event this weekend. I've got some cool tech to show off in that deck as well. So big thanks to Sean and Justin for coming out tonight. Big thanks to everybody for listening, and we will talk to you guys next week when we do it again.